All right. Well, as you all know, we've been making our way through the book of Leviticus, and in these first five chapters, we're going to be covering the five key or principal offerings. And so we've already covered the burnt offering, and that was we talked about how that was really dealing with dedication or consecration to the Lord. And then we covered the grain offering, which really represents thanksgiving, and it's a time when the worshiper would be acknowledging their dependence upon the Lord, and also it deals with service in a sense as well. And then here in chapter three, we're going to be talking about the peace offering, which really represents fellowship or communion with God. And then, Lord willing, we're going to hope to get to both chapters four and five this evening as well, where we'll be talking about the sin offering and the trespass offering. So as we've been going through these offerings, we've noticed that each individual offering is of a certain type, you know, and it's for a specific purpose. And as we've been going through these offerings, we've seen that there are very exact and precise rules as to how that offering is to be brought and what specifically is to be offered and who is the one who does, who is offering it, and all of these things. And part of what's going on here is that, you know, God really wanted the people when they offered these offerings to really think about what they were doing. He did not want it to become just be some kind of a ritual, some kind of a mindless thing that they were doing. Although over the course of time, it did become a sort of a mindless thing. But the Lord really wanted the worshiper, the one who was offering, to be doing it with their whole heart and with their whole soul, their whole mind, everything that was in them, that it wouldn't be mindless. The other thing that's really interesting and really neat about what's going on here is that when you look at like these five different kinds of offerings, in a way, it's like the Lord is pulling apart, because as we've talked about, all of these offerings are pointing to Christ. They're all pointing to what he did, the offering that he made, you know, which we really focused on last weekend, right? As we were looking at, you know, at Good Friday, looking at the crucifixion of Christ, his resurrection and everything else. And the thing that's interesting is that when you look at that offering, you look at that sacrifice that Christ did, it appears to be just a singular offering, a singular sacrifice, which it was. But by looking at and studying these different offerings, as we are in the book of Leviticus, these five in particular, it's in a way it kind of pulls those what Christ did apart and allows us to see that when he died, that offering, that sacrifice he made, there's more than just one thing going on. He's dealing with our trespasses. He's dealing with our sins. There is a peace that is created. There becomes thanksgiving. There's consecration, you know, that both is represented in the life of Christ and how he dedicated and consecrated himself, as well as us as believers as well. So that's kind of an interesting thing to be aware of, is that by studying all these things, we're really able to see Christ in all of his fullness. So as we now look at this peace offering, we're going to really see what it really represented and what it is all about. One of the things I'll say before we get into it is that in chapter three, you know, we are introduced to the peace offering, but later on in chapter seven, we're going to get more details, not only about the peace offering, but also about the burnt offering and so forth. And so we'll get into that. But as we open up into this and we begin to look at it, one of the things that we want to keep in mind is that the peace offering was another one of the free will offerings. So the burnt offering, the meal offering, or the grain offering, as well as the peace offering, they're all voluntary. They're all free will offerings. And then the sin offering and the guilt offering, or the trespass offering, those were mandatory. So let's just go through and just see what chapter 3 has to say here. So chapter 3 of Leviticus, verse 1 reads, "When his offering is a sacrifice of a peace offering, if he offers it of the herd, whether male or female, he shall offer it without blemish before the Lord." And so in this first verse here, we see the kind of offering that is to be offered here. One of the things that's distinct here or different than in when we were talking about the burnt offering is that here it says that this offering could be either male or female. I don't know exactly what the significance is of that, but this is something that I at least was able to see as being a different thing. The second thing is that, again, it is to be offered without blemish before the Lord. And this, of course, is because it's pointing to Christ, right? There, and Christ, we know, is without blemish. And, you know, in the word, it talks about different kinds of defects, right? There's such a thing as a spot, right? Which is an inherent defect. It's something that, you know, like, let's say that animal or a person could be born with a spot, like a birthmark or something like that. That's an inherent blemish or defect. But then another one would be a blemish, which is something that is acquired, like something that happens to the animal, like, you know, becomes, you know, lame or wounded in some fashion. And so, again, because we're pointing to Christ here, and all of these offerings are a type of Christ, we know that Jesus didn't have any spot. He didn't have any inherent defects. He wasn't born with a sin nature, and he had no blemish. He didn't acquire any defect. He didn't sin as part of his life. And so we see those things in the first verse. Verse 2, it says, "And he shall lay his hand on the head of the offering and kill it at the door of the tabernacle of meeting, and Aaron's sons, the priests, shall sprinkle the blood all around the altar." So we see the same exact procedure going on here as we did with the burnt offering, where the worshiper was to lay their hand on the head of the offering and kill it, identifying with the offering. And, you know, there is that transference, and there's that substitutionary sacrifice going on there. Verse 3, it says, "Then he shall offer from the sacrifice of the peace offering an offering made by fire to the Lord, the fat that covers the entrails and the fat that is on the entrails, the two kidneys and the fat that is on them by the flanks, and the fatty lobe attached to the liver above the kidneys, he shall remove. And Aaron's son shall burn it on the altar upon the burnt sacrifice, which is on the wood that is on the fire, as an offering made by fire, a sweet aroma to the Lord." And so we see here that the fat is burned here. And that is something that is distinct with all of the various offerings. And, you know, that is just something that, you know, we sort of see that, you know, and we're going to see later in this chapter, but that the fat belongs to the Lord. And it does make you kind of question, well, what does that mean? What is that all about? Well, you know, the fat really represented the richest or the best part of the animal, okay? And so really, this is a way in all of these various sacrifices of God communicating that the best belongs to him, that the best of everything belongs to him. And so that could say something to us, right, about a sacrifice that we might make, or how we might live our life for the Lord, that we would want to bring, and we would want to give our best. And I always think about kind of going back to when I was 16 years old, and this is when my good lifelong friend Jeff Hogan witnessed to me when I was working there at Knott's Berry Farm. And I remember him talking about, you know, accepting Christ and living for the Lord and stuff. And you know, what did I think about that or that kind of thing? And I was saying, and I said to him, I said, well, you know, it's something that I'll probably, you know, get around to, you know, after I, you know, go and I, you know, get my education, get a degree, you know, get a job and have a family and stuff like that, you know, then, you know, I'll turn my attention to the Lord, you know. And I always remember that because that's not really the way the Lord like intends for our life to be. Like we're kind of, you know, giving the Lord kind of the leftovers, or we're waiting until like we're older before we give to him. You know, we should be giving the best, you know, giving our strength, you know, to the Lord. And you can say that about, you know, just about anything, right? You know, just like in terms of like how we might order any priority in our life or order our day, you know, what part are we giving to the Lord? You know, it's just, I guess you can say it's a rhetorical question. It's not something to, you know, create any kind of legalism or guilt or anything like that, but it is a reality that we should be endeavoring to give our best, you know, to the Lord, because, you know, the best belongs to him. And when we do, you know, it is like like that last clause in verse 5, you know, it's a sweet aroma to the Lord. You know, as we talked about when we were going over the burnt offering, you know, that you know, a life that is dedicated to the Lord, that is consecrated to the Lord, you know, that is a sweet aroma to the Lord. When the Lord looks at that life, it's sweet to him. And so likewise, you know, when we're giving our best to him, that is it's a sweet aroma to him. Verse 6, if his offering as a sacrifice of peace offering to the Lord is of the flock, whether male or female, he shall offer it without blemish. If he offers a lamb as his offering, then he shall offer it before the Lord, and he shall lay his hand on the head of his offering and kill it before the tabernacle meeting. And Aaron and his sons shall sprinkle its blood all around the altar. Then he shall offer from the sacrifice of the peace offering as an offering made by fire to the Lord, its fat and the whole fat tail, which he shall remove close to the backbone, and the fat that covers the entrails, and all the fat that is on the entrails, the two kidneys and the fat that is on them by the flanks, and the fatty lobe attached to the liver above the kidneys he shall remove. And the priest shall burn them on the altar as food, an offering made by fire to the Lord. And if his offering is a goat, then he shall offer it before the Lord. And he shall lay his hand on his head and kill it before the tabernacle of meeting. And the sons of Aaron shall sprinkle its blood all around the altar. Then he shall offer from it his offering as an offering made by fire to the Lord, the fat that covers the entrails and all the fat that is on the entrails, the two kidneys and the fat that is on them by the flanks, and the fatty lobe attached to the liver above the kidneys he shall remove. And the priest shall burn them on the altar as food, an offering made by fire for a sweet aroma. All the fat is the Lord's. And so we see here that there are these different options, right? So we first read of offering an oxen or you know, a bull. Then we now are reading about a lamb and a goat and all these different things. So they're just different animals that can be offered and that are acceptable to be offered as part of a peace offering. Now, as I said before, as we go on and we get to chapter 7, we're going to see that there's to understand a little bit more about this peace offering. But, you know, as a preview, I'll just say that what this peace offering, what took place here is that when they would offer this, what would end up happening is that they would end up eating this this sacrifice, okay? And this, you know, when they sat down and they ate this sacrifice, it was really representative of fellowship and communion. And so the reason why is because in these times, the act of eating together with someone was a very symbolic act, you know, and actually, you know, the Jews, they didn't just eat with anyone. Like, they wouldn't eat with Gentiles, for instance, right? Because they really saw the act of eating as symbolic. It symbolized becoming one with the person that you're eating with, okay? So they really saw, like, if they're breaking bread or they're eating meat or whatever they're eating, that they're eating this common thing, right? And that when you eat something, you know, people talk about, you know, you are what you eat, right? So when you eat something, like, that thing that you're eating, it becomes a part of your body, right? It goes into your digestive system, and then your body uses it to make cells, and it becomes part of your body. And likewise, you know, the person you're eating with, that thing becomes part of their body too. And so there is a sense at which there's a feeling like the people who are eating together have become united with one another. There is communion, there's fellowship there in the eating. And so that's why this peace offering, it was, had that same idea of becoming one with God, because as part of what took place here is that when the animal was killed and it was roasted, a portion of the animal would go to the priest, a portion would go to the offerer, and then there was another portion that was for God, and that portion was burnt completely, right? So that was, you know, kind of, it represented the Lord's portion and him, you know, partaking in that. And so all of the people who were involved in all of that, there was a, you know, a sense of fellowship and communion. And so really, this is the reason why, you know, when we look at communion in the New Testament, that just that act that the Lord commanded for us to do, it does make it a very meaningful experience if you really understand what's going on there. And that is that we are all eating of the bread and the you know, the wine, those things that really symbolize the body of Christ and the blood of Christ. And as we are eating of that together, we are united together, and we are also nourished, right, by him, and we become a part of him, and we become a part of each other, okay? And so communion would be sort of the New Testament version of this peace offering, which again, it represents fellowship. And so that is really, in a nutshell, that's really sort of the peace offering that we're talking about here. And just to read verse 17, it says, "This shall be a perpetual statute throughout your generations in all your dwellings. You shall eat neither fat nor blood." So those two things, even though, you know, others, other nations, other peoples, they may have eaten those things, or they've eaten blood or whatever, those things were to be sacred. The fat, which we talked about, belongs to the Lord. The blood is something that the life is in the blood. The blood is what provides atonement for sin. So now we turn to chapter 4 of Leviticus, and we then begin to get into these mandatory offerings, the first of which is the sin offering. And it's really interesting, you know, as you know, whenever I'm looking at or studying anything where it's talking about sin, and there's like the distinction between the different types, right? Sin and trespasses and iniquity and stuff like that. it's really kind of interesting to really think about those things deeply. But here we can see in chapter 4 that there's an offering for sin, and we're going to see that there's a difference. Sometimes we kind of just look at these things all as one, but there's a difference between sin and trespasses. And we can just talk about that broadly now, right? And say that when the Bible is speaking of sin here, it's talking about when you are doing something wrong, but you're doing it unintentionally, okay? And many of you have heard this, but that word sin, it really, what it means is to miss the mark. And that word itself, it comes from an English game called Sinner, basically. And it was, you know, use a bow and an arrow, and you basically were shooting these arrows to try to land them into a hoop. But if you missed that hoop, then you were considered to have missed the mark. You were a sinner. And so you would be, you know, you would lose whatever bet it was if you're betting for whatever the case is. And so that's that game, but that is the word that is used to describe, you know, sin, right? Which is when you're not living up to God's standard, right? It's not like you're trying to be rebellious. It's not that you knew that something was wrong, but you did it anyway. It's something that you're trying to get right. You're trying to do right, but you just, for whatever reason, you're just not able to get there. It's something that the Lord is still working with you on. It's something that you're still trying to root out of your life. But the reality is, whether you intend to do it or not, the result is the same, right? And that is that the wages of sin is death, right? And so that sin needs to be dealt with. And so, you know, again, it just simply means you've missed the mark. And God's mark is perfection, right? And, you know, the Bible talks about the fact that we are to be perfect as our Father in heaven is perfect. But the reality is that nobody is perfect. No one has lived a sinless life. The only one, the only man who's lived a sinless life is the God-man, Jesus Christ, right? And so this, in chapter 4, it's dealing with that situation where you didn't intentionally try to do something. Now, transgression is a whole different thing, right? And that's where you willfully do something that's not, that runs counter to God's law. And you know that you're not supposed to do something, but you do it anyway. And interestingly enough, God has a sacrifice for that. He has a solution for that, which is kind of interesting, right? Because you think that, you know, in a way that God would say, you know, the only thing that I could forgive or could cover would be if you make a mistake, and you should never, you know, just intentionally sin. But He knows what we're like, right? And so He provides for both. And again, as we think about it, I want to just, you know, underscore or reiterate that point that, you know, all these different sacrifices, they represent what Christ did, you know, that, and it's good to know this, right? It's good to know this, that, because, you know, you could say to yourself, wait a minute, you know, I did that intentionally. I didn't just make a mistake. You know, does God have the ability? Is His blood sufficient to be able to address that? And the answer is yes. And so that's what's so good and what's so important about this. So we can read here about the sin offering. Verse 1 of chapter 4 says, "Now the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, 'Speak to the children of Israel, saying, if a person sins unintentionally against any of the commandments of the Lord in anything which ought not to be done, and does any of them, if the anointed priest sins, bringing guilt on the people, Then let him offer to the Lord for his sin, which he has sinned, a young bull without blemish as a sin offering. And so here we're going to deal with the different people, right? And what is required of them. And so we start out by looking at an anointed priest. And it says that, you know, one of the things you can see here is that even an anointed priest can miss the mark. Even an anointed priest can sin. And when he sins, it says that he brings guilt onto the people. So it's something that needs to be dealt with, right? And we see here that he is required to then bring a young bull. And we've talked about the value of a bull, that it's like, it would be equivalent to like a tractor trailer today, right? A Caterpillar or a John Deere tractor, right? Very, very expensive. And so, you know, what we can take from this is, to whom much is given, much is required, right? So this priest has to bring this bull as an offering. Verse 4 says, he shall bring the bull to the door of the tabernacle of meeting before the Lord, lay his hand on the bull's head, and kill the bull before the Lord. Then the anointed priest shall take some of the bull's blood and bring it to the altar of meeting. The priest shall dip his finger in the blood and sprinkle some of the blood 7 times before the Lord in front of the veil of the sanctuary. And the priest shall put some of the blood on the horns of the altar of sweet incense before the Lord, which is in the tabernacle of meeting, and he shall pour the remaining blood of the bull at the base of the altar of the burnt offering, which is at the door of the tabernacle of meeting. He shall take it, all the fat of the bull as the sin offering, the fat that covers the entrails, and all the fat which is on the entrails, the 2 kidneys and the fat that is on them by the flanks, and the fatty lobe attached to the liver above the kidneys, he shall remove, as it was taken from the bull of the sacrifice of the peace offering, and the priest shall burn them on the altar of the burnt offering. But the bull's hide and all his flesh, with its head and legs, its entrails and offal, the whole bull he shall carry outside the camp to a clean place where the ashes are poured out, and burn it on wood with fire. Where the ashes are poured out, it shall be burned. So we see here the whole procedure that takes place. Again, this bull is without blemish. It's as a sin offering. He's a kill it. And the key thing here is the blood and the fat that is involved here. And the one thing that is distinctive here is that that aside from the blood and the fat, they are to carry the whole bull outside of the camp to a clean place where the ashes are poured out, and burn it on wood with fire, where the ashes are poured out and it shall be burned. And this, again, because it's pointing to Christ, we can see like a really amazing thing. Let's look at Hebrews chapter 13, because it would serve as the best commentary for what this represents. So in Hebrews chapter 13, verse 11, it says, for the bodies of those animals whose blood is brought into the sanctuary by the high priest for sin are burned outside the camp. Therefore, Jesus also, that he might sanctify the people with his own blood, suffered outside the gate. Therefore, let us go forth to him outside the camp, bearing his reproach. And so we see here again how this sacrifice, this sin offering, paints a perfect picture of Christ, in that he was sacrificed he was outside of the camp. And so it's just amazing how all of these pictures are painted by the Lord. Verse 13, going back to Leviticus chapter 4, says, now if the whole congregation of Israel sins intentionally and the thing is hidden from the eyes of the assembly, and they have done something against all of the commandments of the Lord and anything which should not be done and are guilty, when the sin which they have committed becomes known, then the assembly shall offer a young bull for the sin and bring it before the tabernacle of meeting. And so here we see something interesting. One is that the whole congregation, like a whole nation, could actually sin or could actually fall short of the purposes that God has for them or what they're required to do. You know, Israel was from the very beginning, you know, even when the Lord, you know, spoke to Abraham, they were to be an example. They were to be representatives. They were to bless the world, right? And to live their lives in a way that's holy and set apart, you know, before all of the nations. And so, you know, to the extent that they were not doing so, they were falling short of what the Lord's purpose was, and it constituted sin. But here it's talking about in verse 13 that it's something that's hidden, and and so the idea is that it wasn't something that they were intentionally doing, but they were still, you know, missing the mark. They were still falling short of what God had for them, and when they became aware of it, then they were to go ahead and offer a sin offering. And in this case, it was to be a young bull that they would offer. And they would go through the exact same procedures that we saw that the priest would have to do, and which we've seen in all of these offerings. And so we can move down to verse 22 of chapter 4, and we can see that a ruler also can sin. And so it says, when a ruler has sinned and done something unintentionally against any of the commandments of the Lord, his God, and anything which should not be done and is guilty, or if his sin which he has committed comes to his knowledge, he shall bring as his offering a kid of the goats, a male without blemish. And so that we can see here what's going on. And you can see that this occurring throughout the Old Testament. There are occasions where, you know, David would offer, you know, a sin offering. You know, it's, to me, it's kind of interesting to understand that, you know, the Lord provides what would be an acceptable thing to do, right? Because if you think about it, you know, in these times, you know, a person could sin and they can say, oh man, I messed up and I'm not right with God. Like, what would be the right thing to do? What would be a thing that could be done that would be acceptable to God? And so I just think it's a thing of grace, you know, that the Lord would say, here's what it is. So you wouldn't just be grasping, you wouldn't just be making up something that has no meaning to God. And so he's saying that when a ruler would unintentionally do something against the commandments, that this would be the thing that he is to do that would be an acceptable covering or atonement for that sin. And again, these are mandatory. So when a person became aware of it, they were to address it and to deal with it. And so here it says a kid of the goats would be the right offering. And again, they go through the same exact procedure as in the previous ones. And then lastly, we get to just the common people, you know, people like you and I, just like us, right? It says, if any of the common people sins unintentionally by doing something against any of the commandments of the Lord and anything which ought not to be done and is guilty, or if his sin which he has committed comes to his knowledge, then he shall bring as his offering a kid of the goats, a female without blemish for his sin, which he has committed. And again, here we see something that's distinctive. It's a female. It's not clear why that is, but that is the case here. And again, the priest would go through the exact same procedure in all of this. The last thing I would say here is just to point to that word. If we look in verse 35, you know, the very last sentence there, it says, "So the priest shall make atonement for his sin that he has committed, and it shall be forgiven him." And that is, you know, mentioned in each one of these cases, right? For the ruler, for the congregation, and everything else. And just to understand that, you know, as we've been talking about, atonement is a covering. And you know, in Hebrews, you know, one thing that you could do is, you know, look at, you could be like sort of reading or studying Leviticus along with Hebrews, okay? Because they're very much, you know, Hebrews really talks about the significance of all that's going on in Leviticus. But it, you know, talks about how it is impossible that the blood of bulls and goats could take away the sins of the people. That's why they had to continually do it. But what it was is a covering. The Lord basically said this would be a covering where he would not, in a sense, he would, you know, cover up that sin so that, you know, he wouldn't be sort of looking upon it. But it didn't take it away. But Jesus, we know, he actually did take away our sins once and for all. And as a result of that, you know, it did something in it for us. And I'm going to get to that when we wrap up here. So now, lastly, let's look at chapter 5, which is addressing the trespass offerings. So in verse 1 of chapter 5, it says, "If a person sins in hearing the utterance of an oath, and as a witness, whether he has seen or known of the matter, if he does not tell it, he bears guilt." And so we start out, and we're going to see a few things here, but giving examples of what would constitute, you know, a trespass, an act that would be done where you would actually be guilty, you know, as opposed to just making a mistake or doing something unintentionally. So this would be where a person is a false witness. You know, they've taken an oath and someone's asked, okay, what did you see? You know, what happened? And they would not tell the truth. You know, the judicial system in these times, as well as today, it relies upon the fact that people are going to be honest witnesses. That if you saw something, that you would tell the truth. If you don't tell the truth, if you're not honest, then it makes it difficult to come up with a good, just resolution to it. And so this is why this was such a grave sin, right? Because this would be the thing that would either indict someone who's guilty and should be indicted, or would clear the good name of somebody. That it's saying here that that kind of person would be guilty. Another example, verse 2, "If a person touches any unclean thing, whether it is the carcass of an unclean beast, or the carcass of an unclean livestock, or the carcass of unclean creeping things, and he is unaware of it, he shall also be unclean and guilty." So there's a second example of touching of an unclean thing. Verse 3, "Or if he touches human uncleanness, whatever uncleanness with which a man may be defiled, and he is unaware of it, when he realizes it, then he shall be guilty of it." Verse 4, "If a person swears or speaking thoughtlessly with his lips to do evil or to do good, whatever it is that a man may pronounce by an oath, and he is unaware of it, when he realizes it, then he shall be guilty in any of these matters. And it shall be when he is guilty in any of these matters that he shall confess that he has sinned in that thing, and he shall bring his trespass offering to the Lord for his sin which he has committed. A female, again here, from the flock, a lamb or a kid of the goats as a sin offering. So the priest shall make atonement for him concerning his sin. And so here we see the offering that the Lord prescribes here, which is a lamb or a kid of the goats as a sin offering. And in this way, the priest would make atonement for him concerning his sin. Verse 7, if he is not able to bring a lamb, then he shall bring to the Lord for his trespass which he has committed, two turtle doves or two young pigeons, one as a sin offering and the other as a burnt offering. And so this is really important, right? Because what if you're poor, right? And you wanted to make atonement, you know, for a trespass, there is a way that you can do so with turtle doves. And it says here, and he shall bring them to the priest who shall offer that which is for the sin offering and wring off its head from its neck, but shall not divide it completely. Then he shall sprinkle some of the blood of the sin offering on the side of the altar, and the rest of the blood shall be drained out at the base of the altar. It is a sin offering. And he shall offer the second as a burnt offering according to the prescribed manner. So the priest shall make atonement on his behalf for his sin which he has committed, and it shall be forgiven him. But if he is not able to bring two turtle doves or two young pigeons, then he who sins shall bring for his offering one-tenth of an ephah of fine flour as a sin offering. He shall put no oil on it, nor shall he put frankincense on it, for it is a sin offering. And so here's another way to offer a sin offering if he's not even able to bring the turtle doves or the young pigeons. He can do it with flour, but unlike the grain offering where they were required to offer it with oil and frankincense, here it's just the fine flour by itself that is being offered as a sin offering. Verse 12, then he shall bring it to the priest, and the priest shall take a handful of it as a memorial portion, burn it on the altar according to the offerings made by fire to the Lord. It is a sin offering. The priest shall make atonement for him for his sin that he has committed in any of these matters, and it shall be forgiven him. The rest shall be the priest's as a grain offering. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, if a person commits a trespass and sins unintentionally in regard to the holy things of the Lord, that he shall bring to the Lord as his trespass offering a ram without blemish from the flocks, with your valuation in shekels of silver according to the shekel of the sanctuary as a trespass offering. And he shall make restitution for the harm that he has done in regard to the holy thing, and shall add one-fifth to it and give it to the priest. So the priest shall make atonement for him with the ram of the trespass offering, and it shall be forgiven him. And so here we see that there could be a trespass where it involves something that belonged to someone else. And in those particular cases, then they are to actually, as it says in verse 16, make restitution for the harm that's done, in addition to offering this animal, in this case, a ram without blemish. They're to make restitution of whatever harm, whatever they have taken, they would add one-fifth to it, and that it would be like interest for the trespass that they've done to someone else. And then verse 17, it says, if a person sins and commits any of these things which are forbidden to be done by the commandments of the Lord, though he does not know it, yet he is guilty, shall bear his iniquity, and he shall bring to the priest a ram without blemish from the flock, with your valuation as a trespass offering. So the priest shall make atonement for him regarding his ignorance in which he erred and did not know it, and it shall be forgiven him. It is a trespass offering. He has certainly trespassed against the Lord. And so this is, some kind of a trespass that's being done in ignorance. And it's showing that even, you know, it's possible to do something where you just don't even know that you're doing this thing that's wrong. But what's important here is to understand that even if done in ignorance, it still needs to be addressed. There still needs to be a sacrifice. There still needs to be a covering there. And so it's in a way you can look at this and say, it's an example of the fact that, just the fact that you're ignorant, that doesn't make you, make it okay, right? It's that sin, that trespass has to be dealt with. And so, with the completion of chapter five, we really, we sort of cover these first five offerings. We're going to talk some more about them as we get into chapter seven. But one of the things I wanted to do just in wrapping this up, there's just something that occurred to me in going through this that seems to be really interesting to me, okay? And that is that when you look at these offerings, there's a progression here that seems to be at work. But the ordering of it is interesting, okay? Because, you have the burnt offering, the grain offering, peace offering, the sin offering, and the trespass offering. And as I think about this, in my mind, I would be wanting to start in chapter five, right? And basically, you look at a human being, right, who is born in sin, right, and also lives a sinful life, that needs to be addressed, right? And so there's this offering. And you start out, if you look in chapter five, and you start with the worst case. This is a person who knows it's wrong, but they do it anyway. And the Lord addresses that. And so you come and you bring this offering and you deal with that trespass. And then the next one, to me, the progression would be the sin, right? Unintentionally done. And you could even put those side by side and say, these are two different kinds of things that separate us from God and need to be dealt with. But once they're dealt with, then what is the result of that? The result of that is peace, right? And so then that takes you to chapter three, the peace offering, that now I can have fellowship with God because now my trespasses and my sins have been dealt with. I can have fellowship. I can have communion with God. And so there comes the fellowship offering. And then you get to the offering in chapter two, the meal offering, or the offering that represents thanksgiving and service, right? And so what happens, you have the sin, it's dealt with. You have the fellowship with God that's restored. You have peace. And then now you have thanksgiving, right? You can be thankful to God that, Lord, you've dealt with all these things in my life, and now I'm just so thankful for what you've done, and I recognize that you are the one who supplies everything that grows in my field, and everything that belongs to me, you brought it, and I just want to thank you for it. And also, we talked about how that offering represents service, and so now, Lord, I want to serve you, and because I have a sense of peace and fellowship and communion with you, and I want to serve you, and so that's represented there. And then lastly, you have the burnt offering, where it's like the ultimate, right? Where you know, you basically say, Lord, I just want to live a consecrated life to you. I want to dedicate my life to you. I want to give everything that belongs to me to you. Like you have it all. And so my whole life is lived for you. And so I see that progression that way. And, you know, and I think it's really interesting. And I wonder, like, why is it in this order? Is it because, you know, like, when you read in Hebrew, like you read from right to left, is that the way? Or the other thought I had was, well, maybe it's just like God, right? It's the way that God looks at things. It's that he looks at the completed situation. He looks at the completed work where and what he's desiring, and that is that you have this person that is complete, right? They're mature, they're whole, their whole life is dedicated and consecrated to God. And so he starts there because that's where he ultimately wants to go. And he kind of, and it kind of goes back from there. But however, whichever way you approach it, it to me is, it's just a beautiful picture of what Christ did, right? Because all of these offerings represent him. And so he's the one who brings us through this progression. He's the one whose singular sacrifice allowed us to be able to experience all of these different things that I just described. So in any event, that's just something that as I studied this, it kind of came to mind for me. And so, you know, take it for what you will, but that's kind of something that I saw there and looking at those various sacrifices. So we'll stop there and we'll pick up again next week in chapter six.